This is Brock and Salk.
You want to go to the Seahawks game? All right, give me one more screen.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines studios.
I would put very little stock in what Brock Hewitt has to say.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app.
Salk, the third time in 2 days, is flat out wrong.
And 710sports.com.
Well, it's not Brock and Salk. It is the show.
No, we are changing things up, man.
They're both gone. How often do both of those guys leave? It's Bob Stelton and Jake Heaps with you. How are you, man?
I'm doing great. You?
I'm not usually up this early. It's still dark out.
I know.
Out.
This is different for you.
It's very different for me. Yeah. I'm not a morning person, but I am today. This will go well. I'm looking forward to this because there's material. There's a lot to discuss here.
Oh, absolutely. It's going to be a fun show.
Well, and you were here yesterday, right?
Yeah, I was here with Brock. It was great. The QBs, man. We were dialing it in.
All right. Well, we'll get into a whole bunch of stuff. We're going to talk to Chris Daniels, the King 5. He's going to update us. He's out there in New York where the whole NHL experience is happening, and Seattle just one step closer to a team, which to me feels like, yep.
Yeah.
I don't anticipate any roadblock, any speed bump whatsoever, and so far that's been exactly how it's gone. We'll talk to him. We'll talk to Ray Roberts. We'll actually talk to Brock. We'll allow Brock on his show.
We'll bring him back just for a little bit, though.
All right. So you guys talked yesterday. Let's get into some of it, because I want to touch on some things that you said yesterday with Brock, which I've got to hold your feet to the fire. It's important that we do that. You guys talked about Russell Wilson in this offense. Now, we're four games into a season, so it's hard to draw hard and fast conclusions on anything. For me, it is.
Correct.
But you come from a much more professional perspective, and you understand more of what's happening. Looking at this offense, and I think people thought when Bevel left and Schottenheimer comes in, okay, sigh of relief. You know, the handcuffs were on this offense, and Bevel doesn't know what he's doing. He doesn't know football. Now you got a football mind in there. But after 4 weeks, I'm seeing a lot of the same complaints. I'm seeing a lot of the same hand-wringing and people saying, well, Russell's being asked to do things that aren't really his strengths, and you're taking away his strengths. You tell me, from a quarterback perspective, what is happening with this offense, the way it's being called,
right,
in terms of how it caters to Russell's strengths?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that Brock and I were trying to get across yesterday was the run game that's happening right now is phenomenal. We have seen over the last 2 weeks this run game really start to flourish, and there was actually a lot of creativity in the way Schottenheimer was calling this game in terms of the run game, in terms of formations and the different style of runs, and he called a really good game that way. But when you watch Russell and you have a top five quarterback on your roster, you have a guy who is a superstar player, who's a playmaker, who has the ability to change the game. And ultimately, I know people argue this all the time, but whether you like it or not, he is a future $30 million+ quarterback here coming up soon. And you're not getting him involved in the game plan. And to me,
in what way? What when you say not getting him involved, what would you like to see?
So what I would like to see is I would like to see more play action pass.
Okay.
See him do the things that he excels in. And he, you know, in terms of, you know, the quick pass game and all that, he did well, and he was able to find open guys. And to me, you could look at it in three different ways. You could look at it, oh man, Schottenheimer, he's just not dialing it up, the plays. What's wrong with this? Why is he not calling these plays? Is Pete getting too much involved in the offense? Is the dynamic there just not cohesive enough yet? They haven't got on the same page.
Do you buy that he's that involved? I mean, I know he's saying it, but no, is that him covering for his coordinator? Or do you think he's truly getting in the headsets saying, hey, I want to take some shots down the field. I want to do this.
Yeah, I think it's just a little – it's not as much as it's made out to be, but I think in certain situations he is getting on the headset and there is communication. But that's not completely unusual in terms of, you know, communicating on special situations and things like that. To me, it comes down to third downs. You have to be able to convert third downs, and that will be able to allow your offense to get more into a rhythm, and now you have the ability to take shots down the field because you're moving the ball steadily down the field. And in play action pass, Russell Wilson statistically is one of the best in the NFL at doing it, if not the best. And I look at it and I go, okay, I look at the play-action pass in this last game. Russell was 3 for 4. Four for five. Three of them were naked bootlegs, and they were easy completions. Easy completions where he was able to dump it off into the flat, and they were able to get a nice 7, 8, 10-yard gain. And then they were able to do one hard play action with a six-man protection. They put the fullback into the flat, and they ran a drive concept with it. And Russell was able to make a big play out of it, not because the play was open, but because it allows him to be able to sit back. It forces this defensive line to respect the run. The pass rush isn't as heavy. It helps out the offensive line. He's got more of a pocket that he can see, and he's got running lanes. So there was a play where he stepped up and he threw it to Doug Baldwin to the left side of the field, and it was a nice 14-yard completion. So I just think if you're going to be as involved and as heavy in the run game and be committed to finding unique ways to run the football, you have to be able to complement it with play action pass. It's simple.
So if you're seeing that, and this I'm not doubting or debating your knowledge here, but we assume an offensive coordinator at the NFL level sees that as well. Schottenheimer's not green. He's not. This is not his first job.
Right.
Why do you think they would not be doing this? If it is that obvious, if it is, hey, this is the obvious move here. You're establishing the run. You've got this defense sucked in and committed to stopping the run. Mm-hmm. It's opening up everything. This feels like the basics of football offense. Why wouldn't he do it? I know I'm asking you to speculate, but
yeah, I mean he got to it a little bit during the game, but not deep shots down the field, not stretching the field vertically. Never really got to that. And that's something that I would like to see. I'd like to see them stretch the field vertically, because you're going to see this more and more. And I guarantee you the Rams are going to come in here and they're going to play cover one and they're going to play cover three and they're going to try and load this box because they understand what this offense is all about. The NFL understands what the Seahawks are all about and what they're trying to do and what they're committed to. And so in that sense, they have to be able to answer that. So to answer your question, I think ultimately you come into a game plan and you're trying to be creative and, okay, we're gonna do some empty formation. We're going to do some different things to try and space these guys out. And I'm all for that as the game goes on. But I think as you're starting this game out, you need to be able to establish this. I'm going to run. I need to complement it with play action pass, and I need to get my playmakers the football, which is Doug Baldwin and Tyler Lockett.
How much say does Russell have? I mean, is he – I'm not saying he's out there devising the game plan during the week, but
right.
Can he go into Pete, can he go into Shoddy and say, hey,
yeah.
You know what, I'd like to do more of this, or I really think this team is vulnerable to this.
Yes.
Does he have that?
Yes. No, I know that Russell and Schottenheimer have a very good relationship. They communicate with each other. There is that healthy dynamic of communication with one another. So that's where, looking at the game plan, it was very conservative this last week. I really loved the way the game unfolded, not because it was a win and it was a nice win versus Dallas, but I loved the way that they attacked and the way they complemented the run game with play action pass, changed the tempo at different points. And I think that's the world that they got to live in.
Let me ask you one question. You guys may have gone over this already. I've been off the last 2 days. When Doug Baldwin comes up a yard short on 2 third-down conversions, do you put that on the quarterback, the play call, or the receiver, not knowing where he's at on the field?
So the first one, Doug runs a stick route. It's called a stick route. You go up about 5, 6 yards, and you're breaking out. And on that one, Doug didn't get to the sticks. So that one was on Doug for not getting to the sticks. The other one, it was just a bang-bang play in terms of Russell getting the ball out to Doug, and you had a defender sitting there right at the sticks, and unfortunately we couldn't convert. So that one was more of a play call decision on Russell to throw it to Doug, and we ended up falling short on
because they've got completions on third down,
right?
They're just not converting.
Yes,
right.
Yes.
So in a sense, the plays have been effective to a point.
Yeah, to a point, and I think they'll clean this up. I don't think this is going to be the norm of the Seattle Seahawks not being able to convert on third downs. I don't think that's going to be an issue moving forward, and I know that's something they'll address. And, again, a lot of these third down issues were things that were outside of Schottenheimer's control. You know, I'm not sitting here going, man, this is all Schottenheimer, you know, he's not doing a good job and all those things. They're just things that the identity of this offense needs to be clear. And if you look over at UW, I think that they have a winning formula with their offense. They're starting to hit their stride. They're going into this run heavy, right? Relying on Miles Gaskins and Savon Ahmed, and they're right now they're doing a great job play action pass, moving the ball down the field, putting Jake Browning in good positions. And so I think that's the kind of style of play that this Seahawks offense wants to do, and they need to do.
They need to do it this weekend.
Yeah.
Oh, boy, they need this to click this weekend. All right, it's time for Need to Know.
Need to Know, the voice of Seattle sports.
Brought to you by VenueKings.com.
Here's what you need to know up first.
All right, the NHL Executive Committee voted unanimously yesterday to recommend the league add Seattle as the 32nd franchise in the league. And for me, and again, we'll talk to Chris Daniels coming up in the next hour, but Jay, I don't know how you felt about this thing since the beginning, but the NHL has made it very clear how interested they were in the city of Seattle and in the franchise being established here. So
right.
As we hit these markers, these meetings, these votes, I don't have any angst. I don't have any anxiety. I feel like all of the drama exists
right.
Between the city council and it's local. It's not about the NHL.
Right.
I think whatever red flag or whatever process needs to be taken over by them.
Yep.
That's easy sailing.
Yeah, and it's exciting, you know, knowing that the NHL is going to come to Seattle. There, like you said, there's not any red flags. There's not anything that's going to really get in the way of this happening. So they're just kind of checking off the boxes, going through the proper channels. And, you know, it's going to be fun to have this NHL franchise here in Seattle real soon. So it's time to get excited.
I can't wait. All right, number two.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
I hate this because this guy fit in right away. And I'm talking about Seahawks linebacker Michael Kendricks has been suspended indefinitely by the NFL yesterday for insider trading. To me, he was such a pleasant surprise. If he had an impact the second he stepped on the field,
yeah,
to me, that's a big loss.
To be in the position that he was, not only to go through all the emotional things that was happening in his personal life, but to be able to walk into the building, not being familiar with this defense, all those things, and to be able to step in day one, be able to make plays for this team the way he has, and be the playmaker that he has been for this defense in absence of KJ Wright, man, it's hard to not have him back, especially not knowing when KJ is going to return. This is a big blow.
Yeah, the timing's bad.
Real
right?
bad.
So now you're looking at either Shaquem or Kalitro being thrown back.
Yeah, I would assume that Kalitro would be the guy coming back. I would assume that they're going to throw Kalitro in there first. It's just bad timing. Earl, now Kendricks, still don't know what's going to happen with Wright. You know, this isn't good timing versus the number one offense coming in.
That's the other part of that is Earl Thomas and Will Dissly officially placed on injured reserve yesterday. Not a big surprise, just sort of cementing what you already knew and expected.
Yeah, it's. I think for us and as a fan base, seeing a guy like Will Dissly have such promise early on and what he's meant to this offense in the run game, and he's been flourishing as a pass catcher. It's just a bummer to see this guy not be able to fulfill a whole season and see what he can really develop into.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
It's Wednesday. It's Washington Wednesday, by God. And the Huskies, they look like the Huskies that everybody expected last week, so now they go up against a struggling, what appears to be awful, Chip Kelly-led UCLA Bruins team.
Yeah.
There's a lot of angst out there. UW, by the way, is favored by 21 points.
21 points. Man.
Do they cover? What do you think?
I think they do cover. I think the way that they're playing, the brand of football that they're playing right now, they seem to be really hitting their stride right now in terms of their offensive philosophy. The defense is playing really well. And they're going into the Rose Bowl versus a UCLA team that's really struggling. I don't see any reason why they won't cover this spread. If they go in there and take care of business, they've got a young quarterback, a freshman quarterback at UCLA, and I think this defense is going to take care of business.
Are you surprised the Bruins are this bad under Chip Kelly?
Honestly, I am. Yes, I think everybody's surprised. You know, Chip Kelly took the world by storm in college football, and to be able to see him go through the struggles, I think ultimately this goes back to I don't know necessarily what's going on in that locker room, in that system. And this is going to be more than a one-year deal for Chip Kelly. He's got to revamp this program to where he wants it to be, his style of play. And, you know, this is just a brutal first year for him.
All right, there you go. Need to know. A reminder, you can listen to the show via the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealers. Time to talk to the professor.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Song.
If you want to take care of him, take care of him now. The price is only going to go up.
Every morning at 7:15.
He's too important to let go. You're not trying to totally break everything down.
Plus, a wild card.
What magic trick would you like to be able to perform?
Yeah, I can maybe try to have you disappear. That could be nice.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Salk.
John, how you doing, man?
Good, how are you?
Good, good. Hey, we were just talking about Michael Kendricks. I think we all knew this was coming. It was just a matter of which week would it happen. But, man, what a bummer. This is a guy who jumped in, and there didn't seem to be any ramp-up period. He had an impact from game one for him until, obviously, his final game.
Yeah, I mean, and he fit in so well because, I mean, his style of play, the way he flies around, how quickly he picked things up. I mean, literally, with like a day or so, he was out there playing 40, 50 snaps, and he loved being here and all that. So the timing couldn't be any worse because the timing right after Earl Thomas's injury to go with the fact that they have the Rams coming up leaves him really thin at linebacker. So a tough break, but also, you know, they were able to get 3 weeks out of him where other teams did not.
Hey, John, what do you think of the Seahawks signing safety TJ Green? And we just found out that they signed also Mo Alexander, who was with the Seahawks during all offseason. What are your thoughts on those two?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense because I know a couple years ago they looked at TJ Green as a cornerback that they can convert because he's got that big, tall, angular body. And, of course, if necessary, they can play him a little bit at safety. Mo Alexander, I think the timing is perfect because one of the things teams are starting to do against the Rams, they're using the three safety set because it gives them a little bit better coverage. And so now Mo can go in there as a third safety because you know that's what they would have probably done with Earl out there. They
right.
have Earl, Tedrick Thompson coming in to go with Bradley McDougal. So it makes sense to get Mo Alexander in because, you know, Delano Hill still has not done enough on the field as far as on the defensive side. He's done a lot on special teams, but I think Mo Alexander makes a lot of sense.
Hey, with Kendricks out, do you expect it to be Kalitro that gets in there ahead of Shaquem Griffin? And then also, what moving forward, I'm just curious how they address KJ Wright, because this feels like this has gone on much longer than anybody anticipated.
Yeah, I think that Kalitro makes the most sense because he does very well as far as communication. You saw the one game that he came in there with Bobby Wagner. He was able to take over and get everything distributed because he got the signals through his helmet, and so that's good, and I think he's played very well. So I think it's going to be Kalitro, and there's no question to that. And I think what they're probably going to do with KJ is just take it week by week, but my guess is, you know, with the London trip coming up, I think their anticipation is he may or may not be able to play that game, but he should be available after London.
Hey, John, what do you think of this whole Le'Veon Bell situation? It's such a unique and weird one that for the longest time he's saying he's not going to come back, and now all of a sudden, oh, I'm going to return during the bye week, week seven. I think a lot of people are confused. I think there's a key point, and I think you'll address this. Yeah. Why is this so significant that he's returning at this point in time?
Well, you know, you knew he was going to return because at some point, I mean, he needs to get vested as far as the year so that the franchise tag doesn't hang on him for another year.
Right.
So you knew he was going to be in the lease for six games. So that would have been sometime, I think, what, November 11th. In this case, I think what he's picking the bye week for, and again, it's a very selfish thing because it's another week that he can come in and think he can get paid. Now, remember, the team will have a two-week roster exemption, so they may or may not pay him. But I think his idea is, like, I've now figured out the number of carries and number of touches I can have, and so it's going to be, because he was worried that they were going to put him on the field for 400 touches, wear him down, and have nothing left for free agency. So I think what he did is he took that bye week then and looked at it. It's like, okay, maybe I can get a paycheck out of this or not and save about $855,000. If not, then he's there for the second half of the season, you know, making the money but not getting the 400 touches.
I'm going to ask you to speculate, John, on that situation and how he's going to be received in that locker room, because I read the interview or excerpts from the interview where he's a martyr. I'm not doing this for me. It's for everybody that's the young guys behind me, and they don't understand the business, and I'm basically laying the groundwork for them to have success and all of that. But how does he heal the wounds in that locker room?
It's going to be tough, particularly with their 1-2-1 start. And if the season gets out of control and they're sitting there by the bye week and, you know, they're not going to be able to make the playoffs. I mean, again, they're not going to be eliminated, but they're already, what, a game and a half behind the two teams in their division, Baltimore and Cincinnati, and they could fall further behind. You know, the offensive line's players have already gone out publicly and made criticisms of this. And this is a holdout that still didn't make any sense because you're not negotiating anything. You know, his franchise tag was going to stay the franchise tag. He couldn't get a long-term deal. I just think they're going to look at it as very selfish, and it's going to be a bad fit in the locker room.
Yeah, I think it's just fascinating that he's sitting there saying, I'm going to use this situation to help the next generation of guys when literally it doesn't do anything. It doesn't do anything for him, and it doesn't do anything for the future of the way these NFL players are going to get paid. It just is kind of a fascinating situation. John, what do you think of the Earl Thomas being fined $10,000 for taking a bow for the Cowboys? And he's got another fine coming his way, you would think, right?
No, that's going to be the main one because, I mean, that's just a standard thing because he got the penalty for the celebration and because they thought it was a little too excessive. And so that was just one that you would expect. As far as other fines, I mean, I think that's he's pretty well done as far as that goes.
You don't think he'll get a fine for...
No, he'll get a fine. You're right.
For flipping the bird?
For the flipping the bird, he's going to get one for that. Yeah, so one more is going to be in the mix. I mean, no more for missing practice because he's not going to be able to practice anymore.
Right.
So I guess his fine days are almost over. Yeah, but he'll get one. Maybe very similar, maybe a little bit worse. Than $10,000, but the big thing is it kind of stains that relationship with the front office, stains the relationship, not with the players, but certainly with the team.
Why are the Seahawks taking a look at Paxton Lynch?
I don't know. I think just a matter of, you know, take a look at a quarterback that's available on the street. My guess would be more obviously he's not going to – I mean, he couldn't play in Denver when he had the opportunity, so he's not going to be able to play here. Maybe they're trying to see if they can get him on the practice squad.
That'd be interesting. After you're paying Alex Magoo, who you're paying him active roster money, you know.
Yeah, they're paying him $436,000. You know, where normally it's going to be $126,300, I think it is. So no, they're paying him pretty good money. He's the highest paid guy in the practice squad. But just I think more just a look at due diligence than anything else.
You ready for the wild card?
Never. No.
All right. Time now for the wild card.
Wild card. Mr. Professor Clayton.
Yes.
If you could gift one aspect of your life or one of your abilities to Bob, what would you give him?
Well, I don't know because, I mean, first off, I can't give him anything physically because he's in condition and I'm not, so I can't do it there. I mean, I guess if I'm gifting him anything, it's like maybe my math ability, you know, whether it's
use that, John.
Yeah, so it's like whether it's going to be on finances, whether it's going to be on the database, trying to get the, you know, all kind of numbers and that. So if I'm gifting anything, it would have to be my math mind more than anything
else. I don't think Bob's as good as spreadsheets as you are.
No way, not even close.
You don't have one with the top 51 on each team on that? And
No, oddly enough, I don't have that.
You don't have anything to break down the likely to be earned on each team and all the players?
Well, come on now. Everybody's got that.
Oh, I know that. Yeah,
so. Come on, Bob. Everybody.
Yeah, no, that's a gift. If you feel like giving and somehow I can receive that, that would be perfect.
And how about on the finances?
I do okay there.
Oh, good. Okay.
I'm okay with that. But all the other stuff that you dive into to a degree of which I can't even relate to, that'd be great.
Okay.
All right. You sounded ready for the wild card, by the way. You sounded perfectly fine with that.
I'm there every day.
Yeah. It was great.
Howdy throws some curveballs at you. That's for sure. This was an easy one.
Yeah, this wasn't too bad. Just give him the math.
All right. Thanks, John.
Thanks.
There he is, John Clayton. Does that every day. Every day you throw a new wild card at him. I do like that you saved his best shot for his open, though, where he said, I could make you disappear.
That's right. Yeah. It's a constant reminder to me of what my place is in the world.
This is back and forth, you know, love-hate relationship that John and Howdy have.
That was a quick response. I like that. That was good. All right. We're going to come back play a game. I haven't had a chance to play this yet. I've heard it. I just haven't had a chance to play it.
I played it last week. It's phenomenal.
How'd you do? Did you win? Is there a winner?
I did okay. I mean, not everybody agreed with my answers, but that's all right. That's what
nobody ever does.
There's no right or wrong here.
Nobody ever does. Which is better? Coming up. It is Brock and Salk.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio,
this is Brock and Salk.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com.
It is Brock and Salk. Bob Stelton, Jake Heaps sitting in for the guys today. We get to play this game. I've heard it. I haven't had a chance to play it, but you told me you dominated. You won. You're the winner. I've got no chance.
I don't know about that. I don't think you can win. Can you win in this game, guys?
Yeah, you said you won.
I think you only
lose. You can
lose.
Certainly lose. Yeah, that's
right. No one wins. They just really lose and they go down in flames.
There is no upside here. There's no upside.
There's no gain. Nobody wins. Well, let's play it anyway. Which is better?
Gentlemen, which is better, Pat Mahomes or Jared Goff?
Ooh, I would have to say right now, this is a tough one because Jared Goff is playing lights out. But I would take Pat Mahomes because what he is doing, not only because of his amazing voice that we heard yesterday, but
I was kind of just scrambling left. I felt Vaughn on my back, and I knew I couldn't throw it with my right hand. And I knew we needed the first down, and so I kind of just like shot putted it to Tyreek, and he got the first down and made a great play. I mean, you just got to get the ball in their hands somehow.
Did you expect?
He's got a strange voice.
Yeah. Man. Your reaction to that?
Gravelly voice, but a little bit of Cookie Monster in it.
He's kind of
Ed Orgeron's son, maybe.
Yeah. Kind of a Kermit with a little gravel.
The heart in this team. I love this team and just how we fight.
I love this team. It's how we fight. This is,
yeah.
I smoked 2 packs of Camel Reds this morning.
That's an interesting voice.
My throat hurting a little bit.
You don't expect that from him.
No.
What do you say, guys? Great to be on the show.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, but the thing is that Pat Mahomes, what he's able to do physically is just so unique and so different from really most people in the NFL. What you can argue that he might be the only one outside of Russell Wilson that can make some of the throws that he can. It's incredible to watch.
It'd be a lot more fun if I disagreed with you, but I don't. I don't, and I like Jared Goff. In fact, I was one of the few people that stood up for him after his rookie year because he only played 7 games behind a terrible line, no weapons around him whatsoever, and an atrocious coach.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like, come on, man. It's too early to call this guy a bust. I think he's still more of a product of his system as opposed to the individual talent that Mahomes has. And I think Goff's going to be very good and is very good. But Mahomes is special.
Yeah.
He's special.
Absolutely.
And he's got a great voice.
Hey, Brock, big fan of yours, man. Sack fumble.
All right, which is better? Robinson Cano at second base or D. Gordon at second base?
Oh, boy. Well, D. Gordon's got more range. D. Gordon most definitely has more range. I feel more – if the ball's hit within their range, I feel more secure with Robinson Cano.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's just because I've watched him for so much longer. I watched him when he was with the Yankees. He was one of my favorite players. Obviously watched him here with the Mariners. He's about as sure-handed as it gets. So I'm gonna lean toward him, acknowledging that D. Gordon has decidedly more range.
Just watching this might be completely out there, but watching D. Gordon play, I feel more comfortable just because it looks like he's trying hard to get the ball.
Yeah.
Robinson Cano, everything is so relaxed. It's so easy. It's like he doesn't even care. It's just like, But he's that good that he makes it look so easy. So easy. Wish I was that good.
Which is better, Jake Locker or Jake Browning?
Or Heaps? There's not a third?
We can't go on the whole Washington Jakes train. There are 5 Jakes on the current Husky roster at quarterback.
And unfortunately, I wasn't a Washington Husky.
Well, it didn't specify. It just said Jake Locker or Jake Browning.
That's true.
We could throw in any Jake we want.
We could get the Jakes going.
Jake Heaps, Jake Hayner, or Jake Easton.
There's only 4.
Sermon.
Yeah, there's only 4 Jakes. They're not quite the great Jakes yet.
Well, only 4.
How many more Jakes do they need?
Well, you need one more to be the great Jakes.
One more?
Right. Like the Great Lakes. Yeah.
Let's take you out of the equation and narrow it down to these two.
Jake Locker was a great mentor of mine. I really looked up to him. He was the guy. He was the guy that I looked up to. He was before me, and he meant a lot to the University of Washington. But I think Jake Browning means that much more to the University of Washington, and I would take Jake Browning, what he's been able to accomplish in his 4 years, being able to take this program along with Peterson and to be able to elevate it to the status of where it is, wouldn't happen without Jake Browning.
Boy, after everything Locker did for you, you just throw him under the bus like that. That's weird.
Forgive me.
No, I agree with the same thing as Mahomes and Goff. I mean, they both have, you know, huge attributes that you want in a quarterback, but if I need a play, if I need the guy to complete that pass, Browning's much more accurate than Locker. I just got more faith in his quarterbacking ability, and part of what made him special early when it is 40-plus touchdown season is his composure and his ability just to sort of remain calm despite the circumstances around him. I just say, and listen, Locker's all heart. He's all guts.
Yep.
He's a guy that's going to run through the wall. He's going to run through that linebacker.
Incredible athleticism.
Yeah, so he's the athlete, but the quarterback, the guy that's going to make the pinpoint pass when I need it, I'm going to lead toward Browning.
Without knowing what's going to happen the rest of this season, which one do you think will be remembered more fondly by Husky fans once their careers are over?
I feel like Locker. There just seems to be some sort of angst with Browning that I don't quite. I get that he's regressed. I mean, he set the standard so high when Ross and everybody
was
here.
Did you say he regressed after a 92% performance last week?
No. Seasons.
Okay.
All right. I think it'll also depend a lot on what happens next year. Because it's like if you elevate the program the next year with a different quarterback or if it regresses, see how much of an impact he has made.
I just feel like they're ready to rip him for some reason, where Locker seemed to have this on water status.
But he also came into the program when it was at a different state.
Yeah, absolutely. Jake Locker is more folklore, and he will live as a legend. But I really hope that Jake Browning ultimately is able to walk away and people think of him in the same light.
See, people are texting in, are you kidding me? Locker all of the way. Locker. See?
Crazy.
People are ready to get down on Browning. I don't quite get that.
Yeah.
Which is better, whether that's uncomfortably hot or whether that's uncomfortably cold?
Ooh, I've lived in both. I've lived in Chicago and St. Louis, where you get the extremes of both.
Yes.
If you're talking about those extremes, I'd rather the heat, because you get in that Arctic cold out there.
Yeah.
You'll get hurt.
Yeah, and I've experienced that same thing being in Kansas. It's the same Midwest cold. It's brutal.
The humidity stinks. I can't stand the humidity.
But I think that's the beauty of living in Seattle. You got all these great lakes, man. If it's hot, get in the lake. Yeah. It's beautiful, right? Cool off. That's why I love Seattle. Love it.
Which is better, Lake Washington, Lake Union, or Lake Sammamish?
I grew up on Lake Sammamish, but family has a cabin down at Lake Merwin down in Vancouver.
Ooh,
gorgeous.
Nice.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
All right, then I'll go Lake Washington.
Okay.
How about that?
All right, there you go.
What's your reasoning? You just want to be contrarian?
I like the name.
Yeah.
The saltwater,
right,
freshwater.
Yeah, that's fair. Saltwater, freshwater, Bob.
Lake.
You
I'm going to go
in
fresh.
That
that's freshwater, man.
Yeah.
Which is better, gentlemen, Pete Carroll at USC or Pete Carroll with the Seahawks?
This is a great question.
He revived two programs, if you will. I know the Seahawks are not a program, but he took two teams that were down. USC, I was out there when Pete Carroll, I used to live out there when he was head coach, and nobody cared.
You're rooming together out there, right?
Nah, he didn't go for that. I threw it out there. He just wasn't very willing. But
that's weird.
USC was just an afterthought. It was just a dead program, and he comes in there and brings them into national prominence and does it year after year after year.
Right.
Man, they became the NFL team out there.
Right. And it's very easy for me to say the Seahawks, being a longtime Seattle, you know, fan and growing up in this area and getting a Super Bowl. But what he did at USC was remarkable, and the amount of five-star talent that he was able to get year in and year out, and the third string running back, the third string linebacker ended up being Pro Bowl guys that played in the NFL. I mean, it was just so unique and remarkable, the program that he established at SC.
That's it.
Which
is better?
Well,
you want to get to cookie, which is better, cookies or brownies?
Yeah, has this been asked before?
No, I just thought it was just too tough of a question. I wanted to let you guys off the hook.
It is tough. Now, you don't know that I'm a huge sweet tooth. So this is really, really hard for me.
Yeah. Okay. I said that. I said a big candy guy yesterday.
Did you? Okay.
Yeah. So what would this come down to?
I would lean toward, if they're just both top notch, the best they can be, I'm going to go with the brownie.
The brownie.
Okay. A good warm brownie is tough to top.
Yeah.
When it's done really, really well.
Yeah. I don't know, man. This is a tough one for me, but I'll go the cookie route.
Bob, I know you're a Costco guy. You get that Ghirardelli's box of, it's like, six packs of brownie mix for less than $6. It's dangerous. You could be making brownies every night.
That sounds like a slice of heaven to me.
To be fair, like, one of those has lasted Kyle for like 12 years.
Yeah, and it sounds like Kyle has
just kind of nibble. You just pick at it. You got to make it last. You got to stretch.
You don't ever do full bites. You just nibble at it.
It makes it an easy bake oven. It's actually a full size oven for him.
That's perfect.
He puts them in the little dishes. He comes out. Oh,
I don't know
so
how
full.
You eat that way. I don't know how he does it. I'd be walking around
it's
hallucinating.
Bird, man.
It's no good.
Too good.
All right. Now, I get to fire football questions at you coming up, right?
Yes.
That's how this works. I'm going to fire three really good questions. I came up with each of them on my own. I did this all night. I put in some work. I'm telling you what.
All right.
Blue 42 coming up. It's Brock and Salk.
Let's go.
Make sure it's freshwater.
Here we go.
This is Coors Light's Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, G, U corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready? Right.
Blue 42 is brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light. The mountains turn blue at 42 degrees.
Blue 42!
Now here's your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Song.
Blue 42! Blue 42! Blue 42!
All right, it is Blue 42. It's brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light. The mountains turn blue at 42 degrees. I don't know if you knew that, but I slaved away over these questions, and by I mean either you or Kyle. I'm not sure who came up with them. You ready?
I'm ready to roll.
There you go. Now we're ready. Now we're ready. All right, question number one. What do the Huskies have to do to finish the season undefeated in Pac-12 play?
Well, right now they're going against UCLA, another team that's kind of down, and the way they were able to take care of business versus Arizona State, versus BYU, you could see that this offense was starting to take form, take shape, and Jake Browning starting to get comfortable, and Bush Hamden as offensive coordinator starting to get into a rhythm. And this defense has continued to play lights out. Jimmy Lake is doing a fantastic job with this group, and it's been fun to watch. So to me, this is another week where they have an opportunity to take care of business, to put together a game where they're able to get a big victory. And then after this gets tough. Start Oregon, Stanford, Colorado, Washington State. It's going to be a tough finish. But in order for them to do this, they have to be balanced on offense. Jake Browning has to be able to play at the level that he's playing at currently, be able to make people pay, because they are going to try and take this run game away. And again, that defense just continuing to be flying around, getting turnovers, and giving this offense more opportunities to put points up on the board.
Question number two. The Cougars. I want a thought on the Cougars, and tell me what has impressed you most about this team so far this year.
Man, I think the offense. I think that's clearly the obvious one, and Gardner Minshew has just been playing unconscionable.
Man, he's unconscionable.
I mean, it's incredible watching him play. And I think he just plays with not reckless abandon, but just he's free out there. He's not worried about trying to make mistakes. He's going out there and feeling confident, and Coach Leach is continuing to foster that confidence. And the way he's been able to kind of in 1 year take over that program after a guy who broke Pac-12 records, Luke Falk. Right? And the way this was looking like Washington State was going to have a big down year. And Gardner Minshew has made the difference in this team.
He's fun to watch.
Yeah.
Plus, he doesn't have to worry about handing the ball off.
He cuts it loose. Too. Yeah. No doubt.
Question number three. All right, we touched on this earlier, but how can Brian Schottenheimer improve this play calling?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is looking at this team, I think they've done a fabulous job in the run game and mixing things up and getting different run calls and different formations, different looks. And I think you complement that, the same philosophy in the pass game. How can we use it, different formations, different personnels to give different looks to be able to get guys like Tyler Lockett and Doug Baldwin the football? To me, those are the two guys, the two playmakers, the dynamic playmakers that you have out on the edge. And it's about trying to get them the ball in space and pushing the ball down the field with a play-action pass. If we can start doing those things, I think that's when you see this offense really start to take off.
Has the line surprised you?
Over the last 2 weeks? Absolutely they have. They've been playing phenomenal. It's been fun to watch. This last game, Dallas, it wasn't pretty. It wasn't very assignment sound. Chris Carson made some, tough, ugly runs. But the way the offensive line played against the Arizona Cardinals, they were assignment sound. They had hat for hat. And Mike Davis, man, he ran with passion.
Like he had something to prove. Like he wanted people to know he was on this team.
Like he wanted to prove that, hey, he is not the third running back on this team. And moving forward, he's going to be the starter until Chris Carson gets healthy.
All right, there you go. Blue 42 happens every day at this time. A reminder, every week this season, Brock and Salk will be giving away two tickets to every Seahawks home game. So they do the Pete Carroll Show Mondays at 9:30. And then later that day, they make a video, one of the highlights of their conversation with the coach, and post a link to it on 710sports.com/win. Now you become eligible to win the tickets by watching the video. It's that easy. You can gain more entries by doing things like visiting our Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram pages, downloading the app, all of that. Then listen Wednesdays, which is today, by the way, at 8:15. We're going to pick a random name of all the people that have entered the contest and announce them as the winner. You've got 5 minutes to call in and redeem your prize.
Stay ready to rock.
So again, watch the video at 710sports.com/win. Listen this morning at 8:15. See if your name's going to be called, and you got 5 minutes to call in and win. It's that easy.
So you got about 8 minutes left to enter, and then we'll be drawn at 8:15.
Yeah, it's the easiest thing. Go on there. Watch a video.
Why haven't you entered, Bob? Did you download the app? What happened?
I've got the app on my phone.
Oh, okay.
That's how I respond to all the insults you guys throw my way every morning. You don't think I'm listening, but then I hear it on the app, and I text in.
You got the wrong guy. You're thinking of Salk.
Yeah, it is Salk. Usually. Insults. It's usually Salk. Usually
and then
you've
in the
got
afternoon,
my back.
It's Jim.
Well, Jim insults everybody. So he's just a goofy old guy out there just screaming at clouds. He's fine. So 8:15, who's going to do the drawing?
Howdy will do the drawing. He's going to handle that.
Really?
Your fate is in Howdy's hands.
Bob, I wanted to play this for you for Mike Leach yesterday. Asked about a balanced offense.
Okay.
And here was Coach Leach's thoughts.
There's nothing balanced about 50% run, 50% pass, because that's 50% stupid. What is balanced is when you have five skill positions, if all five of them are contributing to the offensive effort in a somewhat equal fashion, then that's balanced. But this notion that if you hand it to one guy 50% of the time and then you throw it to a combination of two guys, the other 50%, that you're really balanced and you proudly pat yourself on the back and tell yourself that, and people have been doing that for decades, well, then you're delusional.
Love it.
Bob, your thoughts.
He plays this because I'm not a huge Leach fan. I think he's a good coach. Like him as a coach.
Yeah.
I don't find him nearly as endearing and goofy as other people do. And what's he talking about, man? I mean, you're talking about balance between the run game, it's all encompassing, and the pass game, that's all encompassing.
Balance. You want a balanced offense.
Yeah, I'm not talking balance between individuals.
Stupid. Bob, you're talking about 50% stupid right now.
Apparently,
that's what you sound like right now. You sound 50% stupid.
Apparently, I'll own that.
My thing with that is if it's 50% stupid, exactly half. Then it's also 50% smart,
I guess. What do you think of it? He's your guy. Do you think he's hilarious? Is he onto something? What's your response to that?
I think he deploys an offense that works for his teams.
Exactly. But when you're
the reaction to this has been like, well, how's that work for him? He hasn't won any league championships. He's also been at Texas Tech and Wazoo. So if he's elevated WSU to the point that he's being judged by league championships, that the 10-win seasons are no longer that bar, that it's now gone above that,
right,
then I think that's a credit to the job he's done and the program he's built.
I don't debate his results. Yeah. That's not up for debate.
Yeah.
I'm just debating this literally and saying, well, he's just being willfully painful here because it's 50%. It's all encompassing when you say the run game and the pass game, 50%. I'm not talking 50% to this individual and 50% to these individuals. That doesn't make any sense.
That's 50% stupid.
That's 50% smart, Bob, I guess.
I guess.
He's got a philosophy. You got to love him. And, it's fun watching WSU and Mike Leach. They've got a unique program going on.
They do. Yeah, I enjoy watching him. I like that Minshew kid.
Yeah,
he's good.
He's awesome.
He's really good. All right. As we said, some big news centering around the city of Seattle and the NHL. The man who was front and center in this whole thing, Chris Daniels from King 5, will give us the update, all the details of what went down, what it means moving forward. That's coming up next. It is Brock and Salk.
Because that's 50% stupid.